HCC has no negative side effects in the body, and there's only benefits that come to you when you use it. So it's a lot, it has a lot better safety and long-term safety profile than most pharmaceuticals out there. So that would be my anecdotal evidence, is people who tell me I was able to get off my anxiety meds, which just like lights me up to know. And it just makes me so happy that there's this natural resource that's a functional food with no negative side effects that is helping them in that way.
It's beautiful. And even just how you said it, like, I can tell you're doing God's work. So, I mean, all power to you.
I'm doing my best, brother. I am doing my freaking best. And it's not easy, but it is a labor of love, like I've said.
So what, okay, you said it's not easy. What makes it, because we were just talking about fear, doing what you fear, troubled times. What is it about this that makes it not easy?
Well, for one, just practically, logistically speaking, HCC is a premium product that's very expensive to manufacture. So it makes it very expensive for us to have distribution rights in the United States. It is, let's just say, Chase, with all of his business, my partner Chase, for your listeners who may not know who I'm talking about, my partner Chase, he's my business partner, my life partner, my podcast partner, everything. He has a lot of business acumen. He's been in business for 12 years now. And when we got started, you know, he was hesitant looking at how expensive this product is to for us to carry. That it has not been easy on us, but I, like I said, I was bound and determined. I was like, I don't care if I have to dip into my own savings to provide this to people. I'm going to provide it to people. It needs to be out there. So that was the first point of like, this isn't the easiest thing to carry. And then also it takes a lot of education. Like I said at the beginning, you know, Deborah on the street has not heard of AHCC, yet she probably needs it. She probably could benefit from it. So a lot of my podcast conversations that I, you know, come on and talk to people about, we spend a good amount of time, you know, going through and educating, and because most people have not heard of it. So it requires me to be somewhat of I don't want to use this word, but I'm blanking on a synonym to use. It requires me to be an AHCC expert. Because there's no one else out there talking about this. So I am invited into that space, and I don't call myself an expert. I'm just using it to make a point. It's, it takes a lot of my time. I would say also, how else is this, not easy? Well, back to censorship. I have to be very, very, very careful about claims. Even though there is a ton of clinical research behind this thing, and there's no negative side effects that have ever been demonstrated or measured in any clinical study that I've ever seen, I have to be very careful with claims, because if we grow enough, we have more eyes on us. There's ambulance chasers out there. There are people who are looking for people who are making claims and, you know, starting litigation against them. Like, you can't make these claims. This is not FDA approved for XYZ condition or disease, which is really frustrating, because people are getting advertised to as they watch rom-com sitcoms on late night television. They're getting ads for pharmaceuticals that have a laundry list of negative side effects and may not even do the thing that they're claiming that it's going to do.
Or may worsen the condition. I've seen that before. Right. I'm like, this is crazy.
Right. It's like, well, you might have some help with your Crohn's disease, but you also might want to commit suicide from this medication. It's like, what the? Oh my God. It's just maddening. And, you know, it's just, they can make all sorts of claims about the pharmaceuticals that come out of mainstream medicine. And if people get hurt, meh. And you have something like HCC that is, it's literally a food. It's a functional food with more research behind it than most pharmaceuticals out there. And I have to be careful about the claims that I make because I have a business to protect and a livelihood to protect. So it's not easy. Yeah.
Well, I think you've been doing a really good job because you keep saying things like I've had people who blank or there are studies that prove blank. And I think that's probably the best way to navigate it as opposed to, and quite frankly, again, going back to things that I think seem like a negative thing in regards to free speech, but it seems very positive because it almost might keep you in that lane of not making outlandish claims, making sure that we keep it to the individual. Like maybe it won't help everybody. You know, it's one of those things, like it's so weird. Cause it's like, it's kind of going back to that free speech where it seems like a boundary, but at the end of the day, it could be a beneficial boundary that helps you grow into the person or keeps you humble at some level.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I refuse, you know, sometimes people will come into my DMs. People find me on Instagram and ask me all sorts of questions like, hey, will AHCC help with my blank? Will it help with, hey, I just got diagnosed with hydrogenitis suppurativa. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it. I have to like Google it to see what the heck this person is talking about. Will it help with blank? And I could probably sell more bottles by saying, yes, for sure, it'll definitely help. But I wouldn't be able to sleep at night because what I tell people is the truth. It is, you know what? I'm not sure, but I am consistently amazed by the stories that come back to me and how AHCC helps people because it's so safe, because there are literally like zero negative side effects. I say, you know, it's worth a shot. Here's the recommended dose from clinical research for a therapeutic impact. Try it out and please come back to me and let me know so that I can tell other people who might have hydrogenitis supurativa. And that works. People come back and they're like, hey, oh my gosh, I've been taking this for a month or 2 months or whatever. And I'm seeing great results. And then I pocket that information into my database of like, okay, so I have at least anecdotal evidence that it can help with blank. So I say like, I can't make any claims because every body is so different and there's so many things that impact our health. So that's the truth. But, I do not make claims for anything or anyone.
I mean, I think that's good. I mean, at the end of the day, because when people ask me about diet recommendations, I usually end up, I'm just like, you got to do what's best for your body. You got to tune in and just figure that out, because we can all find people online who, going back to Jordan Peterson, can only eat meat, salt, and water, and otherwise they flare up, versus there's people who do like all vegan and they feel incredible. So it's like we all live in that spectrum somewhere along that line. It's like you got to figure out what works for you. But speaking of, you briefly mentioned in there something about dosage. So what does dosage look like? Is it a ramp up type thing? Is it something that is consistent? Do you have to cycle on and off of it? What does dosage look like near term versus long term?
Yeah, it's a great question. So like I said earlier, I personally take 2 capsules a day for general health, meaning I don't have any systemic conditions that I'm trying to clear or heal or whatever. I just want my NK cells to be optimally healthy year round. So I take 2 capsules every single day.
How much is in capsule?
So each capsule for Immune Intel AHCC is 750 milligrams. So the minimum dose that you would want to take for general health would be 2 capsules. So that would be 1.5 grams. And that's what I take on a daily basis. If I've been around someone who is ill or sick, fighting something, I will up my dose to 4 capsules a day. If I feel like my body is fighting something, because you're still going to come into contact with viruses, there's millions and millions and millions, there's 10 to the 31 viruses in the air that we're breathing right now. So you're still going to come into contact with things that could manifest symptoms in your body, like sickness. So if I feel like my body is working on something, if it's trying to integrate a message from one of the viruses out there, I will up my dose even more to 6 capsules a day. And I usually am splitting it up during the day, like before meals. You can take higher doses all at once. But if you like say you have an empty stomach and you pop 8 capsules, you might have a little like digestive, like, you know, like your body's like, what did you just give me? So it's not like anything is going to happen to you, but it might be like a little upset tummy. So I say to take before food and split it up throughout the day. The therapeutic dose, if you are trying to support your body in, say, clearing HPV, a lot of the women that find me on Instagram are actively trying to clear HPV, human papillomavirus. The therapeutic dose that is supported in research is 3 grams a day, which is 4 of our capsules. So that would be my recommendation, you know, also for someone who is navigating Lyme disease, for epilepsy, for liver disease, and certainly for cancer. The research supports at least 3 grams a day, and you can take more if you want. In some of the research, they go all the way up to 9 grams a day with no issues. And speaking directly to the safety profile of taking large doses, in the safety studies, they gave rats a mega dose of what would be equal to 600 grams.
Oh my gosh.
Remember, I said the maintenance dose is 1.5 grams that I take every day. They gave these little rats the equivalent of 600 grams and, quote, no wow. toxic effects were demonstrated or observed. So that just speaks to the safety profile of this amazing product.
Wow.
So it is been shown safe in many studies showing, you know, people taking it long term. There's no reason you need to cycle off. I don't. But if somebody was listening to their intuition and they were like, you know what, I want to take a month off for whatever reason, that's totally up to you. You are a sovereign individual and you can totally do that. Is there a need for it? No. Like other mushrooms, like lion's mane, for instance, if you take it every single day, you might start to have diminishing effects or diminishing returns where you're like, I don't really notice the effects anymore. You take a month off and you come back to it and it's like, whoa, I really notice it. That doesn't necessarily happen with AHCC. It really helps people, even healthy people, long term, and is shown to be safe. So I hope I answered all of your questions there. Let me know if I didn't touch
yeah,
on anything.
I think
any
you nailed
them.
It. I think you nailed all the questions I was interested in.
Oh.
And that's go ahead.
I just thought of another dosage consideration. It's even used for children and pets. So like I said, anyone with an immune system can benefit. And so a lot of holistic vets will use AHCC to support things like rashes, allergies, tumors, cataracts, anxiety in animals. And so for larger animals, they can go up to 3 to 4 capsules if they're dealing with something serious. You just open the capsules up right into their food if it's a wet food, or you can mix it into bone broth and pour the bone broth over dry food. And then for smaller animals, 1 to 2 capsules is sufficient. And then for kids, I mean, I've had plenty of friends and people who open up a capsule and put it directly in their baby's formula or their baby's milk, which is super badass. Like, that's great. Love it. One of my best friends, her name's Crystal. Shout out, Crystal. She had been giving her baby a capsule of HCC in his bottle every day. And then when he went to daycare at like 2 or 3, she said that tons of the kids would get sick and her son just wouldn't get sick. And she was like, I know it's because of the AHCC. Wow. I've been giving this to him since he was a baby. And so generally, though, the recommendation for kids is anyone under 10 gets a half dose of an adult dose. But once they're 10 years old, they can have an adult dose and be just fine. Have I heard other people doing it from a much younger age? Yes, absolutely. But it's up to mom and dad.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And I was really stuck on that 600 gram number, because I was like, you were talking about how expensive this was. And so I did a quick calculation based on your product. And if someone were to attempt to take 600 grams, it would cost $1,200.
Yeah, don't do that. You don't need to do that. That is not necessary. It's probably wasteful at that point. I mean, when 1 to 3 grams will help most people out there, 600 is a little excessive.
Into a superhuman? What if they start getting superpowers?
You know, maybe that's the threshold for us all to become like X-Men. I don't know.
Whoa. All right. Someone, guys, donate $1,200 to me and I'll take the test. I volunteer as tribute.
Yeah.
No, that's crazy, but I'm looking at your product on your page. It's a very clean bottle. It looks cool.
Thanks.
A quick question. While we're in the middle of this podcast, quick question. I know you have Mushy Love as a product, and I have a discount code for that if people put in Clayton. Would that discount code also get people 10% off for this Intel HCC, AHCC?
Yeah. Yep. So you can use the same code and I'll make sure it's all squared away on our end for you. But yeah, if your code is Clayton, we can apply that to all the products in our store at themedicine.com.
Sweet. Sweet. I appreciate it. So guys, there you go. I just negotiated a 10% discount.
There you go.
So buy your bottle, that 10% discount, throw it back to me and I'll buy $1,200 worth of product so we can do a little test.
That'd be pretty entertaining. That's too funny.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I seriously feel like I'd get like supervision or something. Like I'd be able to see into the future.
It might become psychedelic. I don't know.
That'd be crazy. And that was another thing I was thinking of when you brought up psychedelics. When you brought up like it creating neural pathways, or was it neural pathways you said, or like brain or blood pathways or something?
I think what I was talking about was the communication between the immune cells. So it's improving communication via cytokines. So the cytokines are the chemical messengers that cells use to communicate in their environment. And AHCC supports improved cellular communication.
Okay. Yeah, because I know with like psychedelics, they are even like lion's mane. Mushrooms have like a huge... There's a lot of them that are able to open up neural pathways that can create different routes for the brain to go. And so that's fascinating that this product or something that is in the mycelium is also able to develop as well.
Yeah. I mean, hair on my face. Mushrooms we know are portals and the psychedelics are portals into our own psyche. And they're not doing anything to us. They're just revealing what's already there. They're lifting the shades and showing you what's already there in a more cohesive way, where different parts of the brain that usually aren't connected are now connected. But that all of that was there all along. It's just the mushrooms are opening up that portal between different areas of your brain and allowing you to see things in a different or new way. And I think that the same is also true with medicinal mushrooms, which is a different category than psychedelic. Medicinal or functional mushrooms, which shiitake, lion's mane, reishi, cordyceps, chaga, tremella, these are considered to be medicinal or functional mushrooms. It makes sense to me that they would have a similar mechanism of action, being a sort of portal or connecting things that maybe don't have optimal connection in the physical body, the immune system or the endocrine system, the cardiovascular system, the neural network, all of these things. It makes sense that medicinal mushrooms would have a similar but different effect.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's interesting that it's almost like working on a different part of the body. Like if psychedelics are more brain oriented, these are almost like more immune / different cells, parts of the body that it's working on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an immune, mushrooms in and of themselves, like medicinal mushrooms and certainly AHCC, are potent immune modulators. So AHCC, what I get a lot from people is like, oh, it boosts the immune system. And it's like, tiny correction. It's not boosting the immune system. It's regulating the immune system. So if someone has cancer or HPV, yes, AHCC does support the body in regulating the immune system, which is like amplifying that intelligence. But someone who has an autoimmune condition like Crohn's or RA or lupus, their immune system actually doesn't need a boost. It needs to calm down a bit, right? And so AHCC has this normalizing effect in the body, specifically for the immune system, where it's regulating or balancing or normalizing. So I think that's a really amazing quality about these intelligent organisms. They're not plants. They're not vegetables. They're not quite an animal, but they certainly are sentient.
Well, that casts a lot of light, I guess, to your product name of being intelligent, and then also just calling it an intelligent species, because it's not just boosting the immune system, it's regulating it. If it notices that it's too high, it brings it down. If it's too low, it brings it back up. That's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
That's really crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been studying mushrooms for years and years, and they continue to fascinate me. It's just like they belong in us. And some people, like, I don't know if you're familiar with Paul Stamets.
Vaguely. Yeah. I know. Okay. It might not have been his documentary, but Fantastic Fungi.
Yeah, he was in it. But Louis Schwartzberg was the creator of that film, which we actually got to interview Louis. And ooh, it was nice. Amazing. Yeah, he's awesome. But so Paul Stamets is a very prominent face in the mushroom world, and he teaches, and I don't really have any way of like proving this, but he teaches that humans and mushrooms actually evolved from the same super kingdom, so there's like kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species, when you're looking at the organisms that exist. And there's the animal kingdom, and then there's the plant kingdom, and then there's the fungal kingdom, right? And so he says that humans and fungi actually evolved from the same super kingdom. So they like split off into two different kingdoms from the same kingdom. So that's one of his points, one of his teaching points, where, you know, he's explaining why mushrooms are so beneficial for people. It's because our DNA, mushrooms are closer to our DNA than human DNA than plants. So we recognize them very easily and are able to integrate their messages and their support into our body very easily.
Yeah. How do you look at that, I guess, in terms of, you know, I think like when we're talking about spirituality and consciousness, it can get pretty, I hate to use the word you woo woo, but it can get a little floaty at times. Mm-hmm. So whenever we're talking about like intelligence and these integrating their messages, like how do you see that? How are we integrating the messages of mushrooms? Like what does that even mean?
That's a good question. Integrating the messages. I think that nature, even things like bacteria, viruses, have information for our bodies available. We are interacting. We are not separate from nature, right? Like it's an open system. They're interacting with us. Nature is interacting with us. Everything in nature is interacting with us. When we go outside, it's exchanging. We're breathing it in. We're breathing it out. It's an exchange system with the plants and trees, certainly. Like, it's an open system. We are constantly taking nature in and absorbing the information. Like, when you go into the forest, there is actually a chemical that trees emit that calms your nervous system. This is why in Japan, forest bathing is what it's called. Forest bathing, meaning just get out into a forest and walk in the forest, go for a hike, be around trees and nature, bodies of water. This trees basically are helping to regulate our nervous system with these chemical messengers, these chemicals that they're emitting. So that is the type of information that I'm talking about that trees and nature has, but mushrooms are part of nature. Of course, they have some sort of message or some sort of information for our body to absorb and learn from. Like, again, take the example of viruses. Some people talk about viruses as if they are the same thing as like a bacteria. They're not. Viruses are not living things. They're not living organisms. They're pieces of genomic information, pieces of like genetic material that are emitting from our environment and exchanging information with our system all the time. For example, certain parts of human evolution actually were inserted into our DNA from viruses, namely the placenta. For humans to have a placenta, it was a viral insert that humans were able to integrate the message, and it was inserted into our DNA to be able to have a placenta. That's just one example. There's some other examples with like stem cells too. But these are bits of information that are coming at us from our environment. And if we are healthy and in balance, we should be able to integrate the message. Our body learns from it and becomes wiser and more intelligent. And, you know, it's sort of like a, like our body is the hardware, and our software updates come via nature, viruses, bacteria, all of that. And certainly I would put fungi in there, but I've never been asked that question. And it's an interesting one to explore.
I'm always honored whenever I can ask someone a question they've never gotten before.
yeah, that's good.
No, but it makes sense. Like I guess usually has a tendency to think of intelligence as regards to what does my brain know? What can I think about? Like, it's not solving any crazy math problems, at least not yet when we're talking about mushrooms. But when we're talking about intelligence, it's almost like updating our DNA or updating our gut biome, stuff like this. And so whenever you're talking about intelligence, it's like working with these mechanisms that we almost don't have conscious control over in order to give them these upgrades, intelligent upgrades, so that they're able to deal with the new stressors that maybe do come from our senses, that do come from our environment, that do come from other people or just random genetic mutations.
Yeah. I think the term intelligence has kind of been, I don't want to say hijacked. That seems like very aggressive, but for lack of a better term, hijacked. And we just think of intelligence, like you said, you know, how articulate can I be on a podcast? How intelligent can I sound? How many math problems can I do in a minute? Like, yes, there is that kind of intelligence, but there's also the innate intelligence that exists in our body where we cut ourselves with a knife when we're chopping vegetables. And if it's not, you know, not too crazy, if it's just a little like flesh wound, you don't have to do anything for your body to know exactly how to heal. That's intelligence. Yeah. Right? Like, that's a form of intelligence. How does your body know how to heal itself? How does a plant or an animal know how to create how does a spider know how to create a web? No one taught them that. That's intelligent, the intelligence of nature that we don't necessarily understand, but it doesn't mean that it's less than the intelligence that we have up in our brain. So I think nature is full of just crazy amounts of intelligence that we just don't understand yet. And I think the more that we immerse ourselves in nature, the more we might be energetically exchanging with that intelligence on a level that we might not even be able to measure with instruments, but certainly our body can feel the benefits.
So cool. Yeah. And it's reminding me of a conversation I had with Rubio Lacerda, which if you're listening, it was Odyssey number 072. And she's like a channeler. I'm not sure if you've heard of her before, but she's a channeler. She works with like the Arcturian Council of Light, and she channeled for like an hour on the podcast. And in that session, you know, I was like, oh, you know, are there other intelligent life forms on other planets? And the reply I got was like, well, it's a difficult answer question or answer. Or they said yes. And then I said, can you tell me how many there are? And they were like, this is a difficult question to answer. And what they were saying was, and the way it kind of broke down was like what you're saying, where how do you define intelligence? It's like, you know, they kind of went into like, well, in some cases, animals are more intelligent than you humans. Like, yeah. And I was,
yeah,
that was
we can't even figure out how to stop killing each other.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that was a tough
like,
pill
to I mean,
swallow.
I know nature, obviously death and life and death is cyclical and it feeds into each other. But like, look at the plant kingdom and fungi, and it is like additive. And we as humans think that we're so much smarter than these trees or whatever in nature. But we can't even figure out how to not kill each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny you say that, because I pointed out, I think when we were discussing, something to the effect of, well, we're, you know, the top species. So like, we've been able to master our environment. And they were like, how certain are you that you're able to master your environment? And then they started kind of like talking about how we're not in harmony, if you will, with the way of nature, and, you know, kind of this like almost like over forcefulness. I'm going to do a disservice if I try to quote it, but if you guys are interested in that conversation, 072. But the crux of it being like, there needs to be this cool, we figured out technology, this like physical technology. We figured out how to manipulate ones and zeros in a way that we're able to have computers and calculators. It's like, now can you figure out how to marry that with the natural intelligence that's within us? And it seems to me, at least now that I put that together like that, a huge evolution within my life of like, I used to be a computer software engineer, now moving into maybe more of the spirituality, tends to be a more feminine, I believe, but more of like the feeling, more of the intuition. It's a very interesting dilemma that, not a dilemma, but a way of navigating our life, of seeing, okay, here's the physical reality, but how is this mirroring my internal reality? Are these aligned? Are they disaligned? Do I need to listen more to the physical? Do I need to listen more to the material or the physical, or more of the intuitional?
You keep cutting out.
And so become.
Sorry, I've heard.
Can
like,
you hear me now?
I've heard like three things from the last like 3 minutes. Yeah, it just keeps cutting out. The last thing I heard you say was something about, are we aligned? Are we misaligned? And then that was it.
Okay. I was kind of just getting into like the material versus the intuitional, and like, how do we kind of balance those two energies that live with inside us? And it's almost that balance of masculine versus feminine energy. Like, in this situation, do I need to be more masculine? Do I need to be more feminine? And really becoming attuned with those subtler energies that's occurring within our bodies.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we all have the masculine and feminine in us for a reason. It's not like any of us is 100% this or 100% that. They are modes of operation that are available to us depending on what our environment is calling us into, or what event or what circumstance is coming up. If I am in a charged conversation with my partner and we're both in masculine, top to bottom, right to left, analytical engineer mode, which has tremendous value in our business when we're analyzing data and we're looking at, hey, are we profitable? Are we doing this? Like, you need an analytical mind. You need that top to bottom, right to left. But when I'm in a conversation and we're talking about something that's coming up in our relationship, if we are both in analyzing mode, that's probably not going to be productive in being able to empathize and understand and communicate with a heart wide open that leads to more connection and more love flowing and all of that. So it's like, yeah, they're just different modes for us to step into depending on what our environment or circumstances, how they are playing out. But we also just, we all have different lessons to learn. I tend to and have my basically my entire life live from my heart, from my intuition. And it's certainly served me well in certain situations, but also it makes me, it, I won't say it makes me, I will say I have had the opportunity to learn about myself that because I want to believe the best in people most of the time or all the time, that I can actually get taken advantage of in certain situations because I am projecting my value system on that person and I'm not using my analytical critical eye or, you know, more of my masculine mode to be like, let me tune in and let me evaluate if this person is, you know, trustworthy or whatever. If I'm just like projecting my value system from my heart wide open, I can get taken advantage of. So that's just one example of that's a lesson that I've had the opportunity to learn. And it sounds like you're on the flip side where you have had the opportunity to learn how to tune into your heart and your higher self that is not analytical and it doesn't care about systems and it doesn't care about data. It's guiding you through a different set of ingredients, I think, that comes from a different place than the mind.
Yeah. That can be scary too. Coming back to fear. Being so grooved in one way, especially the analytical mind, which seems to have a more prominent prevalence or presence, a more prevalent presence in our society. That's the logical mind. And especially whenever you need to step out of that and start listening to your intuition, like that's scary because sometimes it'll tell you the exact opposite of what the logical mind will tell you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would actually push back on that a little bit and say that there's a lot of both extremes right now, I think, in our society. Maybe in the 90s and early 2000s, it may have been more analytical mode, but I think the opposite extreme of, as Jordan Peterson would call it, the compassionate narcissist is having its heyday right now, which is the, if we're talking about a spectrum, there is the tyrannical dictator, right, on the far, far right, where it's completely out of balance masculine. And then on the other end of the spectrum is the completely out of balance feminine, where she's not actually, she, just using that as a feminine term, but the out of balance feminine is portraying this overly compassionate love, everybody, everything is okay, everything is accepted, that actually it distorts reality for most of the world, where everything is allowed, everything is okay, everything can exist, which makes reality really hard to understand, even the difference between a male and a female, right? So these compassionate narcissists are on the other end of the spectrum from the tyrannical dictator. And I think, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, but I would say that out of balance feminine is having a moment right now.
Yeah, no, definitely is. And there's a couple things I think that come to mind here. And it's funny you mentioned Jordan Peterson too, because I was just saw him talking about this where he talked about how, you know, how we have vices, right? Like drinking too much alcohol, smoking too much, doing too much of anything becomes a vice and it becomes unhealthy. And he showed this in regards to being nice and being compassionate. Like you can be so compassionate and so nice that it becomes a vice. And once it becomes a vice, not only is it dangerous for you, but it becomes dangerous for anybody else who comes into contact with said vice. It's like, you know, we want to live in a subjective truth reality where it's like, oh, okay, if that's your truth, like, so be it. And the more I dive into the conversation around truth, and anyone, as a caveat, anyone interested in learning more about truth, Asha Nayaswamy on Odyssey number 088, I believe, she has an amazing bit about truth that I'll fill you in where, you know, we live in this world and time where it's like subjective truth. But she pointed out that she sees truth as being directional. So, and we can always fluctuate on where we are in terms of truth being directional. And it same thing goes for logic as well, is where it can be directional. So the example that she gave that I thought was just masterful was she talked about somebody who was sitting on their parents' couch, overeating, overweight, not doing anything with their life, not doing anything. We can all agree that it's a positive increase in their life if they wake up one morning and say, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to work out, I'm going to eat right, I'm going to become a high-paid, successful lawyer and make money. Directionally speaking, we can all agree that that's a positive direction for that person. She then brought in the example of, well, take that same outlook and apply it to somebody who's at the status of Buddha or Gandhi or Jesus. They make all of this influence and then say, hey, I'm going to take this influence and become a lawyer. Like, imagine before Jesus was crucified, he was like, just kidding, guys. I'm not actually the son of God and I'm going to just become a lawyer. Everyone would know, we all intuitively know that they're going backwards in terms of truth. And so I found that such a helpful lens whenever it comes to the things we're seeing with society in regards to, oh, your subjective truth is the truth. Cause I was there. Like, don't get me wrong. I was at the point where like, well, you know, if the placebo effect's real and you know, this is the way they view reality, then who am I to tell them that they're wrong? And the fact of the matter is that somewhere on the truth spectrum, they are correct. However, if we're looking at the direction of truth, they still have a long way to go in order to, I don't want to say a long way to go. That sounds judgmental. There's a place for them to increase their truth or get closer to what is more true. Like there's a deeper, more truthful truth. And it seems to me that there's likely a lot of enabling, or this comes back to us being afraid to tell people the truth, afraid to be honest, then we get trapped in not taking our truth deeper. Like going back to the example, imagine you have that guy sitting on the couch who's overweight and everyone around him's telling him, oh, it's okay. Like just keep being a slob. Don't do anything with your life. You're good. Like that's not helping him. He's not progressing on his lineage of truth. He's not getting closer to absolute truth. And so it's ultimately stunting him. And to bring this full circle, this is why now having a vice of being nice is a bad thing. It's like you're stunning the growth of people because you think that the highest virtue in the world is being nice. And if you just keep putting that on repeat, I'm just going to be nice. I'm just going to be nice. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be nice. It's going to come back and bite you and everyone else that you're associated with at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like that. I remember you giving that example from the conversation when you interviewed, when Chase and I interviewed you for our show. I remember that. And I remember really liking that point of view of truth being directional. One take on truth that I've heard, I actually have a couple that I can share that have also similarly kind of like just showed me a different way of interpreting and filtering, because I think it's getting harder and harder to actually filter what's true. This comes from my mentor, Paul Check. He says, the truth is what works, plain and simple. So if something is working for said individual, that's truth for them. If some, you could take in your example, if the guy that's sitting on the couch who's overweight and doesn't really have any have any goals for his life, he's probably not making a living. Is he contributing to society? If somebody were to say, "Oh yeah, just keep doing what you're doing," well, what he's doing, one could argue, is not working well for him. It's not contributing. It's not life affirmative. That's another way to look at truth, is this life affirmative? And, you know, there's a lot of talk around acceptance of everyone and everything. And I think that there's value in seeing people and hearing people, hearing their stories, empathizing with them. But I think when it's required of us to, us as the outsiders, right, looking into a situation to adopt and take on someone else's view of what's true for them, where I have to now participate in whatever you think is right for you in your life, that is not truth. That's not truth for me. It's not life affirmative. It's not actually what works. What works is true. And so that's one way to think about it, is like, even in the conversation around nutritional dogma, for the vegan who was unhealthy, chose veganism and found health, that's life affirmative for them. And that's true for them. But for me, when I was a vegetarian, I was not thriving. It was not life affirmative for me. I felt awful. So it's not true for me. So I think that that's one way to filter it out, for sure. And there was another way that I was going to talk about truth that has been really helpful for me, and it's slipping my mind right now. But yeah, I'll stop there and let you chime in if you want to. The truth is what works, and it can be different for different people.
Yeah, the thing that I really like, the idea of the truth is what works. Maybe the issue I'm having is, like, what is the measuring stick of what works? Like, what constitutes something as working? That would kind of be my hiccup in regards to it, right? Because if you're talking about, right, back to the example, if we have the guy who's on the couch, he's overweight, not doing anything, he's still alive. So whatever he's doing is working in regards to him staying alive. I guess it becomes a question of, because it seems like there's, ironically, pun intended, it seems like there's some truth in saying that the truth is what works, but there's something about that that just feels a little vague, or that it could be warped. It could be warped in a way that would pull people away from truer truth. Does that make sense?
I think you have to look at what is the objective of the situation. Because right. If dude guy on the couch, his objective in life is to be as comfortable as possible, to engage, to eat everything he wants to eat, to not work out. Like, that's his objective, is I want to be as comfortable as possible in life. And I don't give a crap about contributing to society. Then that's fine. Then what you're doing is working for you. Like, if that's your objective, you are a sovereign individual. You get to choose that path for yourself if that's what you want. So that's what I mean by the truth is what works. You have to be looking at what is the objective of the situation. And I think if that's his objective, I would say probably most people out there, that's not their objective. And so if they have any sort of dream, goal, or objective for their life, that would be the measuring stick, is if it's true, it's going to be life affirmative, and it's going to be contributing to that dream, goal, or objective.
Hmm. So what works in regards to a dream, goal, or objective? So you have to set a goal or objective first.
I think every human, that is absolutely a must for any human to have a guiding North Star in their life, such that they can look at their daily actions and self-reflect on, is this action contributing to my dream, goal, or objective? Right now, my dream, goal, and objective is to educate women about HCC and support them through the process of clearing HPV naturally through this course that I've created. That's my ultimate dream, goal, and objective right now in my life. It's guiding my decision-making on a day-to-day basis, whether I say yes to a podcast or whether I say no and I choose to work out instead. Well, I'm in this position of life right now where I'm saying yes to all the podcasts, all the interviews, because I'm trying to get information out, and I'm putting other things on the back burner because I have that dream, goal, or objective in my mind, where in 2 months, when the course is out there and people are being impacted by it, and it's less of a taking more, it's taking most of my energy right now, I can then look to other things and know that my daily actions are supporting my whatever my dream goal or objective is for that area of my life. So, I mean, change is not easy. And I think if you don't have a dream goal or objective, Jordan Peterson talks about this all the time. People being aimless is an epidemic, having no dream goal or objective. And it doesn't necessarily have to be for your entire life. It can be if you want, but having something that gets you excited to get out of bed, I think every human needs that for sure, to feel like they're contributing and creating an epic life that they love, to feel fulfilled in their life. I think we need that dream, goal, or objective.
Yeah, when you're talking about getting out of bed every morning, I noticed this. I've noticed it before, but I was hyper aware about this. So 2 weeks ago, I went to Disney World and went with like my family and some cousins, aunt and uncle. And I noticed that I was getting less sleep. So I was probably getting about 6-ish, 7 hours of sleep a night, walking 10 hours a day at Disney, and yet felt great. Like there was still time for extra stuff, you know, like I wasn't like when I went to bed, I was like, okay, yeah, I should probably get some sleep. But I found it fascinating because it was like this aliveness, like to wake up in the morning to do the next thing. Oh, cool. We're going to this park. Oh, okay, cool. We're going to hang out with these people. And I found it very fascinating. It was like, there has to be a way to get this into my everyday life, like in my routine, in my life, how am I able to actively want to wake up, actively get out of bed in the morning and not just sit in this daze of like, oh, okay, it's another day. Gotta put on my shoes. Gotta do this. Gotta take a, cause it almost is like directly tied to that quality of life. And so I don't know, let's start there. How have you found, or have you found, maybe it's even a better question to start with. Have you found or created a life where every single day you're like a fuck yes to what's on your calendar?
I would say in general, yes, 99% of the time I wake up and I am excited to start my day. Not only because of the work that I do, like the literal work that I do in the world, but where we live, the things that we engage in, our community that we've built around us, all those things are exciting to me. So like I'll wake up and sometimes I just lay there for a minute, just kind of like getting out of sleep mode, and I'll think about my day, what's ahead of me. And I know that I have an interesting podcast and I become excited about that podcast, or I know that I'm going to wake up and paint. Chase and I, engage in painting a lot. We paint mandalas and we use it as like art therapy and quality time together. And so we wake up and paint together sometimes. If I know that it's a painting morning, I literally get up faster because I love that process so much. It's so therapeutic and it's so calming and it's so amazing to let your inner child just play with paint and not have some judgment or expectation attached to it. Like I'm literally just playing. And so I think finding things like that in your life that fill you up, that, and it, this requires exploration. For someone else, they'd be like, I wouldn't want to fucking paint. Cool. You don't have to do that. I love it.
And it, paint it, for me.
Right. It is really fun for me. So I enjoy that. Like, yeah, it requires some exploration to find what lights you up. What are you into? What do you like? What interests you? What gets your mind going? What makes you like, what are you curious about? If phones didn't exist and you, meaning Google didn't exist, right? Like if Google didn't exist and you could immerse yourself in one type of skill or activity or subject of learning and you got paid for it. Like if you got paid to learn about this thing just out of your own curiosity for the thing, what would you want to study? What would you want to think about? What would you want to explore? If you didn't have to worry about making money, those kind of questions can really give you insight into like what fascinates you, what lights you up. For me, it's my relationship, it's mushrooms, it's helping women clear HPV, it's the podcast, it's the people that we get to meet, you know, like yourself, and building a community around us that of like-minded people that care about us and that we can talk to and have deep conversations with. All these things light me up and get me excited to get out of bed. So I would say yes, 99.9% of the time, I am very excited, but I'm human. And some days I'm like, I could sleep for another hour. You know, it happens, of course. Doesn't mean I'm broken or flawed. Means I'm human. But I would say the majority of my life is filled with things that I am fascinated by and excited by.
I mean, if you're waking up with energy 999 days out of 1,000, I think you're doing pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, you know, barring like sickness or something, like, yeah, I have the most amazing alarm clock in the world.
This is the end of part two. And in part three, we're going to hear from Mimi as to why she has the most amazing alarm clock in the world. But that is not the only thing that we are going to learn. We are going to learn so much more. We dive into the power and the world of HPV, which men, if you're listening, may know absolutely nothing about. However, it is something that affects us and affects women. But it affects up to 85% of us. So you're going to really want to stick around for part three, which is the reality of HPV from diagnosis to empowerment.